Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori and me, will invite a bookish guest to share their favorite book recommendation. If you share a passion for books and know what's looking for your next read, then join us.
Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. Today's bookish guest is Rudy, Kate, and Adele from the podcast, What Would Danbury Do? Hi.
Hey.
Hello. I just waved. Yeah, I waved hello, so just so we're very clear that I understand how podcasts work.
I know, we're official. No, I'm sorry, we're audio. So.
I do that all the time in Zoom meetings now. I wave goodbye. I've never waved more in my life than in like remote working situations.
Yeah. I keep my camera off and I still wave and do like nods of acknowledgement.
I love this. So let's go ahead and get started. So Kate, Adele, and Rudy, one at a time, you would tell us a little bit about yourself.
Shall I start?
Yeah, Kate, start.
Hi, I'm Kate. I am one third of What Would Danbury Do, the Bridgerton podcast. In my non-podcasting life, I work for an arts organization developing programs for writers. Before that, I was an editor for Harlequin running a romance imprint here in Australia. And I really read too much, really. My very favorite thing to do, and I spend a lot of time talking to other people about why romance should be considered more thoroughly in the literary ecosystem.
I love this. How about you, Adele?
Hi, I'm Adele. I work for a university library here in Melbourne, and I've only been doing that for the last 6 months. But before that, I worked in an arts organization, not Kate's. And I was sort of I would organize programming and advocacy for young adult literature and the professionals that work with them. So really making sure that teens were connecting with reading that was fun and not based on the curriculum. So that was, it's been my life for about 10 years until recently. And when, like, I guess what else? I read a lot. I went from at the start of COVID being very behind in my Goodreads, and now I'm smashing it. So thank you, COVID.
I'm 7 books ahead of my challenge now, and I was 4 books behind when we went into lockdown, so.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's the only, you got to grasp at those positives somewhere. Like, I think I was 14 behind, seven behind, and now I'm like, I think 15 up. So I've done pretty bloody well.
That's really impressive.
So how many books have you read so far within, you know, so far in the year?
70.
That's amazing.
Oh, yeah, you beat me. I think I've read 55.
That's amazing.
But you've been reading non-romance. I pretty much exclusively read romance. Like, but my job... romance, you read quicker. Like, you know what I mean? It's not, and I'm not saying anything about quality. Do not, like, take anything. But, like, if you're reading a literary novel, which I know that you do, Kate, they take longer. They don't move.
They do take a little bit longer. Yeah. My job means I have to read very widely across all fiction and nonfiction poetry. So, yeah, I come back to romance novels when I'm reading for myself. But other than that, I do read very, very widely.
That's awesome. And how about you, Rudy? How about, tell us a little about yourself and how's your reading going?
So I'm Rudy. I'm a Gamilla Ray woman. And I don't really have a non-podcast life because my actual job is I work for the Australian Broadcast Commission. Yes, I think that's what we are. I work for the ABC, which is Australia's public broadcaster. My day job is radio and podcasting. And then my fun non-day job is podcasting about books. As far as reading currently, I've never done a Goodreads challenge until this year. And so I set the very safe target of 30 books.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm about to hit that target. I'm about to finish my Goodreads challenge. So that's where I'm at.
I love it. Yeah, I think I'm at 85 this year. So, but we're reading a slow down. But we're reading a slow down. I used to read a book a day. That's no longer the case. So hopefully in the future that may be the case again. But, you know, COVID has brought in a new set of challenges for me, like contemporaries are hit or miss, some fantasies hit or miss, and then, but historicals do really well. So
it's hard to focus.
Just ask, like, just for my own interest, do people count rereads in their Goodreads challenge?
Yeah, you can count them.
I never have in the past, but I figured that this year rereads absolutely counted. Enough was shit in the world that I wasn't going to set artificial barriers to meeting the very easy challenges I set myself.
And, like, the first month of lockdown, I couldn't read. That's how stressed I was. That's how I know I'm stressed. I don't read. And so I had to reread something to reset my reading brain. Like, so it actually took a bit to me to get into reading mode again. But yes, rereads totally count.
Because I do reread things, obviously. I mean, like, our podcast is literally a reread, but I'm not counting those. You should.
They count in Goodreads. It used to didn't count in the past, and they update. It's one of the few updates that Goodreads have done, is that they count the many times you read it. So you can see if you read the book five times, it will tell you the dates that you have read it. So it does count.
Laura, I'm the queen of making artificial rules that only apply to like.
Be careful, Laura, she might rank you.
Have you seen the new Story Graph, which is sort of the new reading tracker?
Yes, I'm really interested in that.
I signed up this week because I was really interested in it. I wanted to see how it worked. But they actually have, one of the things that I love, I don't know very much about the platform, so I'm just going to say that the very little thing that I do know about it that I really like is they have an option for did not finish. And they also have an option where you can click reread. And that's been great because in Goodreads, you don't really have an option for did not finish. And there are occasionally books where I will put down. And being able to sort of track the rereads as well has been really good. So I haven't really played with the platform a lot yet, but what I'm seeing, I'm liking.
That's also awesome. Apparently they have half stars.
Oh, thank God.
Yes.
Oh, I haven't rated anything yet.
So they probably took everything that Goodreads doesn't want to do, update the platform's obsolete. And they probably were like, we're going to update it the way Goodreads should be updated and making the platform. Which, like, is probably what needs to happen.
I hate rating things because I just feel like five stars doesn't really get it done. I would like to have some emoji choices, like hot, a snoring face, like boring.
Some eggplants. Awesome. All right, so let's talk about your podcast. What would Danbury do? Tell us a little bit about the podcast.
I think Adele should start because she's the one who got us into this mess.
I totally did. So I think it was like a year ago, actually, I think about it.
It was almost exactly a year ago because it was at my birthday party that you said, hey, I think we should do a podcast. And my birthday is this Thursday.
So the news about a year ago came out that Shonda Rhimes behind Grey's Anatomy, Station 19, How to Get Away with Murder, like the queen, basically, had signed this exclusive deal with Netflix to produce a lot of different shows. And one of the first properties she bought was the Bridgerton series by Julia Quinn. And if you read any historical romance, you know who Julia Quinn is, like, even if you don't read her. And the Bridgerton series is, like, her big thing. So I saw the potential straight away that there could be a good podcast in that. And also, like, I love historical romance. And what better to, you know, do something fun around something that's going to be great for our community and building the readership even more, maybe, than having Shonda Rhimes do a show. So, and then I think I talked to Kate at her birthday, and I talked to Rudy on Twitter, and I can't find it. We must not have mentioned Netflix, podcast, or anything in the interchange. So I have to try and track down. But to talk about, like, romance reading with your friends is just the funnest thing ever. So, and then of course there's a bit of strategy in that. That show is probably is going to drop at some point this year, so we can be a really great spark notes for people who don't have time to reread the series before it starts, because you usually only get, what, 3 to 4 weeks notice. Although romance readers could totally get that done, 8 books in that time. But or for people who don't want to read it but want to know a little bit more, could probably listen to our podcast. And then season two, we'll dig into the adaptation on Netflix.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait for the adaptation. So what are some of the plans for adaptation do you see for season two to come up?
Well, I think we're going to, because the adaptation is, it's really quite that, it's an adaptation, it's a reimagining of the universe. So there are new characters that have been introduced, there are characters that have been expanded, and certainly because each of the books is solely about one couple, and Netflix doesn't really work like that. I can't see Netflix signing an 8-season deal. I should imagine, I think I read somewhere that Netflix tends to be 3 seasons for everything, even if it's not, even if it's still incredibly popular. So I imagine that they've probably signed a 3-season deal, which means that they're going to have to get through all of what happens in the books in those 3 seasons. So the timeline's going to be really compressed as well. I'm really excited. I think that Shonda Rhimes has such a vision for all of her shows. The pictures that are coming out from the set and the cast just look fantastic. And I cannot express how much I love Dairy Girls. So when I found out that Nicola was cast as Penelope, the sound that I made was inhuman. So I'm really, really looking forward to that as well.
Oh my gosh, amazing. Yeah, I'm looking forward. I heard some noise that it was the first season is going to be book 1 through 4 or book 1 and 4 or something along those lines. You know, they're probably going to introduce certain elements about the romance, you know, but I'm curious.
And that makes sense with the chronology. Oh my God, I can't talk right now. It makes sense with the timeline of the books as well. There's a bit of a gap. I think after 4, because wasn't 4 supposed to be the last book, Rudy?
I think so.
Yeah, 4 was where it was supposed to end. And also, basically, 4, 5, and 6 all kind of happen on top of each other. It's, there's a lot of overlapping timelines between Colin, Francesca, and Eloise. Like, all of, yeah, their story. So I can see that working quite well, sort of compressing that all into one season, those 3 books.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, this is fascinating. So let's talk about Bridgertons. Who is your favorite Bridgerton?
By marriage or by birth?
Let's do both. Let's do marriage and birth.
Okay. Pick your favorite lady. Colin, probably, in terms of the bio. You know, I do like Daphne a lot, though, as well. Look, I like a lot of them. I wouldn't read the books, and we wouldn't have a podcast if we didn't like them. You know what? It's hard to choose favorites, but in terms of by marriage, probably Kate.
Oh, yeah, me too. I'm although I would Kate.
Kate, who marries Anthony. I like her a lot, but I also... Like, Gregory really punched above his weight. Like, I really do like... I've gone completely blank.
Lucy.
Lucy?
Like, Lucy is so pragmatic. I kind of just love her to death. So, I think Kate and Lucy are kind of very similar personality-wise as well.
Agreed.
But in terms of Bridgerton,
Probably Violet, actually. I'm going to change the rules to Violet. Then the mother, the matriarch.
The rule is pick your own Bridgerton. I think Violet. Violet's 100% a Bridgerton. It's fine.
By marriage. So I like the by marriages more than I like the by births. Yeah.
I was trying to figure out if it was too cute to say that I also like Kate best. But I'm just going to lean into it. It's 100% fine. Kates are amazing across the board.
Mm.
I think by birth, maybe Hyacinth. Certainly Hyacinth is a lot of fun to read about. I don't know what she'd be like to hang out with in person for long stretches of time. But yeah, I really, really liked reading about Hyacinth.
I think by birth, Hyacinth, I've got to agree. And by marriage, I actually kind of want to say Michael.
Yeah, because the man can do stuff.
I think that... Oh my God.
He definitely wins best... best... I can't even finish that sentence. Anyway, sorry, Rudy, keep going.
Adele has lost the power of speech thinking about Michael. I just think that he's lovely, and that book, we spoke about it a little bit when we were reading it, that it doesn't, people tend to forget it when they're thinking about the Bridgerton series as a whole. I think most people, when they're thinking about the series, really are only talking about the first four books.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably, maybe not even the full first four, because I think that, I still think that a lot of romance readers don't like Benedict. And I think the two are very loud. But yeah, we didn't get a lot of backlash when we talked about him being the worst. So I think most people, when they're thinking about the Bridgerton series, they're really only ever talking about the Duke and I, the Viscount Who Loved Me, and Romancing Mr. Bridgerton. So mm-hmm. that's one, two, and four.
Yeah.
When he was wicked, has a special place in my heart, and it doesn't really have the same tone as the rest of the series.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's something really lovely about that book, and I think that Michael is a big part of why it is lovely, and I love it.
I've thought about your question of which Bridgerton I like the most. I think it'd probably be a toss-up between Anthony and Colin. Like, I like Colin's shit-stirring ways. Like, he's in a lot of the books, like, making, like, prodding people. Like, the way he prods Michael is brilliant in When He Was Wicked. But, like, Anthony, I really like seeing his relationships with the siblings throughout all the books, because he's become their father for all intents and purposes. So he's really stodgy, and he's, like, but, like, he's got the weight of, like, 8-7 siblings on his shoulders. So I think I really like Anthony, even though he's petty and stuck up, but like, you know, he chose Kate, so he can't be that bad.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he's terrified of bees.
Yeah, I was gonna say about the bee situation, you know. So.
We ever talk about how weird it is that, sorry, I know that at one stage we started saying that Kate is Violet. Did we ever talk about the weirdness of Anthony effectively marrying his mother?
And so did Gregory. Gregory basically married his mother as well, so in Lucy. So yeah, it's a bit gross.
Is it though?
Gross. Just weird.
Psychologically interesting.
Yes. Psychologically interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think we all thought of it. I don't think we discussed it on the podcast at all, actually.
Did any of them marry their father? I suppose, did any of them marry Anthony stand-in? Not really.
No, I think they probably all married Collins, like Colin Lights, really. No, wait, no, I mean, Philip is a bit...
Anthony-esque?
Yeah, I mean, not
Simon is a bit Anthony-esque.
Who is? Sorry, Ruth?
Simon. I think Simon is Anthony.
Yeah, that's and, very true, actually.
And Gareth is absolutely Simon. Like, they're the same character.
Yeah, yeah. You might be right, actually. Michael is not. And
Philip's a bit of a...
Philip is like Anthony, but not as good as Anthony.
I think Philip is Anthony if he had no family.
Anthony, oh, you're so right. He had
no sense of responsibility, but Philip had a family.
He had children.
Well, Anthony was raising his sibling, so...
He was, so... True. Philip is like a shit version of Anthony.
Do you have a favorite, Laura?
Colin and Penelope. So I have a soft heart for Penelope, just feel for her. And then Colin, just the Schitzer, like he just kept showing up in the books, and I love him for that.
Yeah.
So. I would love to know who Julia Quinn like loves the best. I think the ones we love the best are the ones she loves the best, because she's put all that work into them. But she totally loves Colin more than anybody, I think. Yeah. And Penelope.
Yeah, I think so too. I feel like she was like, she made a huge point about having baby Colin in the first come scandal. She was like, there's baby Colin. Like, yeah, there's Anthony and Benedict too, but it was like, baby Colin.
And Colin's hungry again. I'm like, oh my God. The big thing for me is if they do the adaptation and Colin isn't eating in every scene, I'm going to be so bummed out. Like, he needs to be, that actor needs to be, like, chowing down every scene. Yeah. Like, was it Rudy said, like, Brad Pitt in Ocean's 11, like, 11? Like, he's just constantly snacking on something.
There's like a historical YouTube clip somewhere of Brad Pitt just eating in every scene of every movie he's ever been in. That's the kind of energy we need Colin to have in the adaptation.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I love it. Awesome. So, now we're changing things up. We're going to talk about romance. We're going to talk about, when did you start reading romance, and what do you love about the genre?
So I started reading romance when I was 15, and my dad is the reader in our family, and he raised me on very serious books. My mum's not much of a reader, so that wasn't where I was getting my romance is from. It was actually one of my friends raided her mom's bookshelf. So I started with Jennifer Cruzzi's Faking It and went from there.
That is such a good first romance book. It's such a good first romance book.
Yeah. It's arguably too good of a start.
Yeah.
Like, it sets certain expectations, and it makes it really hard to go to the more kind of wild out there books, which are like, I'm trying to go backwards a little bit at the moment. So I've been picking up some of the more out there titles that I've heard about for years. I'm attempting now, because I think that I'm in a place where I can actually read them without just getting sort of angry or upset. What was the next part of the question? Sorry.
So what do you love about the genre?
What do I love about it? I think the guaranteed HEA is a really big factor. I work in a pretty serious environment. And so when I'm off the clock, I like to be properly off. And I like being part of, I like reading about parts of life where, you know, the good people win and and they triumph. And they find love. And I think that there's something really radical about just embracing love. Or there can be something really radical about that. So yeah, that's kind of the basics of what I love about the genre.
I love it. How about you, Adele?
I think I was somewhere between 10 or 12, and I was at my grandmother's house, and I'm not from a reading family pretty much at all. So I didn't really see a lot of, my mum read, but she read like New Age books, so I don't really count that. So I was at my grandma's and I was bored, and we were there for weeks, and I found her 1970s Mills and Boone. And they were the time when they were all horribly brown, orange, and like even the green kind of looked a bit like poo. Like it was just like all those shades that was not great. But I read a couple of them, and they're like, it, like category romance, I guess. So they're really quick to read. And then I would go home and I'd have to go near my mum's workplace, and she worked near like a Salvo's, like a Salvation Army. Mm-hmm. And at the front, they always had like a basket of Mills and Boone novels, and you could buy three for $2. This was 25 years ago. I would just buy like three of them, and I just read a crap ton of Mills and Boone category romance, or Harlequin. Is it called Mills and Boone in the US?
No, I don't think so. I think they're Harlequin.
So when I'm talking about that, I'm talking like Harlequin, sort of, you know, the short category romance books.
Yeah.
And then I think when I was 13 or 14, I read The Chic, which is, we'll just skip that, very young. And then I discovered Lee Greenwood's Seven Brides series, which is a Western historical romance series about a series of brothers whose father was like big in Virginia and was basically a drunk womanizer. And to get him out of Virginia, like all the friends and family put money together and bought this crap ranch out in Texas, straight after the Civil War. So like it's each of the brothers, there's seven of them, end up marrying each book. This sounds familiar now that I think about it. Marry a woman with a name that is a flower. So George, who's the oldest, and a little bit like Anthony now that I think about it, marries a woman called Rose, who he basically orders her so he has a house, like someone to look after the house and like raise his six-year-old youngest sibling. This is sounding very similar right now. And I just love that series. I've reread it somewhat recently, and it's not as good as I remember, but it's still pretty good. And it was written by a guy. So the first series of romance books that I absolutely adored was written by a dude. So there you go.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
How about you, Kate?
I have a similar story, only in my case, my grandmother came to us. so I have a Canadian family and Australian family. My dad's Australian, my mom's Canadian. And my nana came to visit one summer when I was 12, and she read Mills and Boone novels. And this would have been like early 90s. So they were all like, but this big, and they were hardcover, and they were all color coded. So like the dark blue ones were medical, and the light blue ones were sweet. And like the baby pink ones were like slightly hot, and then the red ones were really hot. And my nana never went anywhere near the red ones, but she would go to the library with us and take out like stacks of these Mills and Boone. And our family were big readers, and I was a huge reader, and I sort of run out of everything to read, and my nana handed me one, and it was a light blue one. So there you have it. It was Dreaming, actually, by Charlotte Lamb. I looked it up a few years ago.
You started with Charlotte Lamb?
I did.
Oh my gosh. How's that for an entry point? That's great, right? Too.
So then I tore through all of the Mills and Boone all the way through high school. Like the librarian just took to putting them aside for me whenever they came in. I discovered the red ones on my own.
The red ones have always been my favorite too.
They're Blazes, which sadly they don't publish anymore. I used to really like the Blazes. And then somewhere in there, I started reading Amanda Quick, and that was sort of my foray from reading category into reading single title romances. And I think it also explains why historical remains sort of my absolute favorite era of romance novels, I guess. And it wasn't very far to jump from Amanda Quick to Julia Quinn, and the rest is history.
So what kind of historical...
I used to read...
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Read. I used to read Amanda Quick at... there was a couple of her books in my school library at high school. And so...
Oh, that's progressive.
So my friends and I, in year 12, we would have our like roll call in the library, and we set ourselves up next to the romance shelves, and we would pick a different book off the shelf and do dramatic readings for each other. And so Slightly Shady, Amanda Quick, was one of those.
Lovely.
You're producing even back then, Rudy.
I love this. So speaking of historicals, which historical time period do you love? Do you love Regency, or do you love any other time period?
I do love the Regencies. I really like Victorian and Georgian and Edwardian as well. Laura Lee Gerke, oh gosh, this is going back to the turn of the century series. That I really, really loves. And I sort of was wishing that we would have seen more in that time period. And I like medievals as well. So the only thing that I don't really respond to, and this might be having grown up Canadian, I don't really, really respond to American historicals.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoy historicals set in most time periods in other countries.
Okay.
I like Regency, and I definitely like American historicals pretty much of any era for some reason. But largely the Western stuff, I don't know why, but it's something that follows me in movies and TV shows as well. I like the Westerns. I think I like the depiction. I mean, obviously it wasn't a good time to be a woman, but some of the women were freaking, really amazing in that time period. So I do like a good mail order bride. I don't know why. It was one of the first books I read basically that I liked, but obviously it has to be done well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think I'm really a Regency, probably a little bit Victorian as well.
All right. How about you, Rudy?
So I've been rethinking my relationship to historical romance. I have to admit straight up, I actually don't know the names of time periods, and
That's why I avoided it.
So just set Rudy. In.
Confession, me too.
Like, as far as I'm concerned, it's all set in the past.
True. It's all accurate.
It is accurate.
So I'm a First Nations person from Australia, and more specifically Gamilaroi, but that, like, because of that, it has particularly recently got me rethinking the types of historicals that I read, because I started out with authors like Julia Quinn and Lisa Kleypas, and I'm quite literally looking at my bookshelf right now, you know, like Elizabeth Hoyt, like Eloisa James. So these are all very, very white. They're all set in England, quite literally the people that colonized my people.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like it's...
I think that's why I'm... Yeah, sorry.
There's a bit of cognitive dissonance that I have to kind of engage with every time I read these books, because the way that these characters have the wealth that they have is because they're oppressing people like my own ancestors, or not just oppressing, like killing. There's something in that. And then I can't, and because of that, it also kind of filters into every historical that I read. It doesn't matter what continent it's set on. There is a part of me that is going, P.S. occupied land. Like, yeah. I'm sort of laughing as I say this, but it's because I'm uncomfortable. So I have more recently started to pick up books from people like Lydia San Andres, Jenkins, people who are engaging in that aspect of, like, of history as well, like talking about those oppressive powers, the way that, like, the actual histories of the land and acknowledging the truth of it. So I still gravitate towards your really, like, white bread historical romance of England in the past. I'm so sorry. I wish I knew whether it was I do wish I knew whether it was Regency or Victorian that I liked.
It's all the same.
It really is, isn't it? Anyway.
It's all the same.
So I still kind of gravitate to all of those
shaking
authors.
Your head. The editor is like, no, they're not the same. Be precise in your language.
There's nothing. There is honestly, like, in the best possible way, there is nothing I love more than disappointing Kate with my ability to stick to details and grammar.
Grammar is a social construct. That doesn't bother me so much, but, you know. Preciseness is important. Precision is important.
So
while I still kind of gravitate to those historical authors that I have been reading for the last, like, 15 odd years, my relationship to them is changing, and it has made me more interested in authors who are open to exploring their own relationship to the historical periods that and countries, continents, whatever that they're writing about as well. So that's where I'm at.
I think some of my discomfort with it as well has led to me reading so much more contemporary in the last few years. I didn't used to read contemporary at all. All I would read was historical romance. That was it. And then probably in the last 5 years, going more and more into contemporary because I want to see the world that I live in more, and the women that I know and the men that I know. And I want to see, like, there's not a huge amount of, like, LGBT representation in historical romance either. First Nations, obviously, because no one wants to have a hero that's overtly, like, making money off of other people. Like, there's a lot there. And obviously, yeah, I think I read a lot more contemporary as a result. It's hard, but I think it's at least we're doing the thinking, and actions are changing as a result of that, and we're asking for different books to be published. So I think it's good, but it's a start, and we need to be more active in that as well. I think just letting us, yeah, if anything's sort of come up in the last year, it's like you need to actively help the world become something that you want it to be. Yeah,
I think so. I think we need more diverse books. Like, we need more diversity and just more conversations about what's going on in the world and how it's reflected in the books that we read. So that's great. Awesome. So let's get back from the tangent. Let's talk about romance tropes. So, Kate, what is your favorite romance trope?
I actually put a lot of thought into this.
Of course you did.
And I sort of came up with my favorite pairing and then, like, the tropes that I love it associated with. So Rudy and Adele are going to roll their eyes, but my favorite pairing is grumpy sunshine romances, where you have one grumpy main character and then the other sunshiny main character. So I'm talking about, like, Get a Life, Chloe Brown by Talia Hibbert did this recently. The Wall of Winnipeg and Me had a really lovely grumpy sunshine. Right? Right.
I love that book.
And it's love so it. Huge. It's like, it's an absolute brick.
Over 100 pages. Yeah.
They don't hook up until, like, the last 30 pages or something.
I know. But it doesn't matter because you're just reading it because the dynamic works so well. But I especially love when that grumpy sunshine is mixed with enemies to lovers, like The Hating Game, which is written by an Australian Sally Thorne. Red, White, and Royal Blue by Casey McQuiston is another really good example of Grumpy Sunshine and Enemies to Lovers. And Lucy Parker does it really well, I think, too, with her fake relationship books, Act Like It, in particular. And, I mean, Pretty Face has the same dynamic as well, but that's not a fake relationship. So I don't know that I have a favorite trope necessarily, but I definitely have a favorite pairing.
I like it. I like this pairing. How about you, Adele?
So I am known for not remembering pretty much anything, and I think I've already proven that twice in this recording so far. But I really like when there's a childhood relationship. They doesn't have to be sweethearts. Like, they could hate each other as kids. Like, I love when that sort of comes. There's a history that isn't about love or lust. It's just about, like, existing. So I like when that comes into play and, like, knowing each other's families and stuff like that. So I think the childhood sweethearts, playmates, and particularly, like, the heroine has an older brother who has a mate that they've, like, that they either had a good or not so great relationship with. So, like, most recently I've seen that in Dear Enemy by Kristen Callahan, which is about Macon and Delilah and such names. And he dated her little sister growing up, and she was adopted and didn't look like the rest of her family. Like, there's all this stuff going on. But, like, 10 years later, she becomes his assistant to protect her sister, who is awful. So and then they have this, like, push pull the whole time, and it's great. And you're like, oh, he always liked her, he was just awful. So I don't love that, like, the boys treat you mean because they're keen. Like, I don't love that, but I do like that childhood relationship. And I particularly like that in historical romances too, because, as you know, a duke always has another duke as a bro that's around, and usually they don't have any parents, so they have to go and spend the summers with that family, and so they've always known the younger sister who was annoying in pigtails in a tree or something. They're, like, that's quite common. So I think that's my thing. But I also do like the gruff monosyllabic heroes in the vein of, I guess, Darcy. And so I've just started reading Talia Hibbert's Merry Incmas, because I also, and I don't like Christmas as a person, but I like Christmas historical romance for some, who knows why. So yeah, that's like my two things in one.
I love it.
They're not tropes, but yeah, anyway, like, I like Christmas in my historical romance.
I love it. How about you, Rudy?
So I was really struggling to pick a favorite trope. So I've decided to go with a trope that I wish there was more of, which is actually, I kind of love heroines that are a little bit vapid. I think it's a reaction to there being so many heroines who are super competent and super smart, like, in those sort of stereotypical intelligence kind of way. And I kind of like the handful of books I've read where the heroine is a little bit, a little bit vapid, a little bit ditzy, but that, like, is inherently still pretty great. I think part of it is that she gets underestimated in a way that I think a lot of women do. So books like Chaos Reigning, and which is by Jessie Mihalik, I think her name is, and also Darlene Marshall wrote a historical, she writes pirate romance, and so her Castaway Dreams has, like, Daphne is just delightful. Like, she's a little bit of an airhead, and her, like, all of her intelligence is kind of based around fashion, and it's kind of because that's the only thing she's ever been allowed to or encouraged to be interested in and good at and that it says something really interesting to me. And so those kind of characters, like if you have watched Schitt's Creek and you love Alexis, that's who I'm talking about, that kind of archetype.
And now I've got la 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 in my head.
Exactly. You know, like she might be a huge, huge yacht, but she's also... She's also just like incredibly cool and kind and probably like curious and open to learning more. It's just that the, you know, expectations on her haven't really pushed for that to happen yet, or for her to keep that those smarts under wraps. Like I love that. I think that there's something really interesting and fun in that type of trope.
I love it. I definitely want to read more of that. So thank you for putting a word to the type of archetype and also the sunshine grumpy with enemies to lower. So this is awesome. All right. So this is a question. I'm just going to, you can insert the romance subgenre. So, Kate, what kind of romance subgenre do you love? And then what has been your favorite book that you read this past year in that subgenre?
Oh my goodness. Okay, so my preferred subgenre, I guess, as we spoke a bit, is historical, is the one that I come back to the most. but it's also the one that I'm reading the least at the moment. Mm-hmm. So like Adele, I'm reading a lot of contemporary romance at the moment, and really finding what I'm looking for in those books. The books that I've read recently that I really, really loved, I read Temporary Wife Temptation by J.C. Lee, which mm-hmm. was really, really good. That has that fake relationship element that I really mm-hmm. love. It doesn't necessarily have the grumpy sunshine, and Rudy probably wouldn't like it because they're both incredibly competent all the way through. Mm-hmm. Which is sort of why they feel like they can go into this relationship being, you know, practical and competent and understanding the barriers and the boundaries. And so when they can't keep their hands off each other, it comes as a complete shock to them. And they don't know.
I need to read this.
They don't know quite how to manage it. So
I like competent people too. I just think there's like plenty of them, and I would like some incompetent people.
But we all three of us do like some competence porn though. Like we do.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I recently got into, this is Rudy's fault because she's been yelling about it for ages, and it was more about finding the time to fit it into my schedule. I recently like absolutely burned through all of Rebecca Weatherspoon's novellas, just one right after the other. So I can't even tell you what the titles were or which book was which, but because it was just one right after the other, I just burned through her entire backlist. And that was some fun, let me tell you. That was a very good time. So I would strongly recommend, if you need to get yourself out of the world and into a different headspace, just start at the beginning and read until you hit the end.
I love it. Yeah, Rebecca Weatherspoon is one of my authors who's on my TBR. Like, I want to bring her on the show, but I need to read more of her books. And I'm like, it's like, when am I going to read them all? But I have to, so... Yeah. Awesome. All right, Adele, you like hockey romance.
Which is not a subgenre. It's just my thing. It's my catnip.
It is my catnip too. So I've been looking forward to hearing about your take on.
So I will say I've got like about five authors that I would read like just automatically. I will say I haven't read something I really love this year, so I don't have anything I can directly like talk about. And I don't give five stars. Like, I don't do that. It's not how I roll. It's
She's always really harsh. It's
always She's really space harsh. To improve. So, all right. So, obviously, like, Serena Bowen's Brooklyn series, which is around a new baseball. Oh, sorry. I do like other sports balls. But, yeah, it has a new hockey team. And at this point, I think the last book just came out. And there's just... probably too many books, but I really do like her world.
Kendall Ryan's Hot Jocks, which I've just started reading, which I like, but I wouldn't consider it outstanding. Elle Kennedy's Briar U, which I just read the most recent book, and it was fine. It was fine. And Helena Hunting, who write, I started reading because she wrote a book called Pucked, and I laughed when I saw it. I'm like, I'm gonna give it a go. And it's like farcical slapstick romance, which I don't actually like that much, but I kind of, there was something in her writing, and she started like turning down the slapstick in a newer series. Yep. And I really, really like it. So, yeah. So it's Rita Bowen, Kendall Ryan, Elle Kennedy, and Hella Hunting, and basically anything about sports ball, I will probably read.
Have you read Rachel Reed?
I think I have, but probably not a lot. I'm writing that down. Give me more people.
Heated Rivalry is my favorite out of the three that are out. It's hockey romance, a secret. They're rivals in hockey and have a secret relationship. They're male-male romance. And it's basically like 50% of sex, but it's just really good. So that's...
I'll give it a go. I will say the male-male hockey romance... I have liked reading some of it, but some of it feels like it is fetishizing gay men in a way that makes me quite uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And the fact that there aren't very many like super successful gay romance writers writing own voices is troubling to me. So I think I that's where I have a bit of discomfort with straight women writing gay men in the romance.
Yeah.
So I actually, and that we, you know, it's kind of reflective of the fact there's not as much female-female like romance being published because straight women like to read the gay men romance, which I mean, I do too, but there's a fetishization level that makes me very, very uncomfortable, and I don't think people have interrogated about themselves. And I also note hockey is very white. So I actually do like the other sports balls like football, and there's a lot more I've read a lot more characters from Latino and black backgrounds, and I also like a coach's daughter and a player trope. Yes. Is a thing I kind of also like. I kind of have a power thing, right? Is that what's coming into play?
I think so.
But I was mention one more thing, and it's about competition, is the Jessica Clare series, The Games, which every book is based on a reality TV show. So the first book is on Endurance Island, which is Survivor, basically. It's about two contestants falling in love whilst they, like, trying to vote each other out. So it's kind of great.
Love that.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So Rudy, what's your favorite soft genre, and what book have you read this past year that you love?
I don't know what my favorite subgenre is, because I think I read more based on tropes than anything. But I am going through what new books I've read this year, and the ones that I seem to have rated the highest are all sci-fi futurism kind of things. So Polaris Rising and the rest of that consortium series, but also A Conspiracy of Whispers is one of the books that I started right as the lockdown for COVID-19 happened. And it was actually a pretty good choice for a book right in the middle of all of that, because it is a book where, for plot reasons, the heroine really doesn't want to get close enough to touch the hero, or for him to be close enough to her to touch her. So there's a lot of, like, she's very protective of her personal bubble, and she's like, and so that's also sort of a futuristic kind of, it's post-apocalyptic, and that's by Ada Harper. Currently there's two books in that series, and now that I'm thinking of futuristic / dystopian Alyssa Cole's dystopian post-apocalyptic series, which has Radio Silence as the first book in the trilogy. I'm blanking on the other two. But yeah, that is also a fantastic series of novellas. So I guess let's say that that's my favorite of this year.
I love it. And tell us where we can find you online.
You can find the podcast at Bridgerton Pod on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and you can find our website at bridgertonpod.com. But you can find me at Snarky Wench pretty much across all the platforms.
You can find me at Katie Did in Oz across all the platforms as well.
Okay. And I'm Rudy _ B, so BEE, on Twitter and Instagram. Although my Instagram is a little bit more dancing than it is books.
She's a great
dancer. It's really
good
dancing though. Yes. So do yourself a favor and follow her on Instagram.
That's awesome.
I'm going to get back to dance classes as soon as things open up.
When the world restarts, yes.
Yeah. That's awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you for recommendations.
Thank you for having us. It was really exciting.
Thanks for asking. I've been writing things down that Kate and Rudy have been and you have been saying, so I've got a good TBR list now.
That's awesome. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Once you connect with fellow romance readers and make new friends, get weekly book recommendations, attend monthly meetups, then join our Patreon community. You can join at whatreadnextblog.com/Patreon. Romance lovers, check out Queen Bee Reads Etsy shop for cute and comfortable bookish apparel. The shop also features social justice apparel and fun items from some of your favorite TV shows like The Schitt's Creek and The Office. Use code WHATTORE10 to save. Visit whatreadnextblog.com/QueenBeeReads. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Discover new podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.